Welcome to the albums that saved us. Pearl Harbor has quite the musical legacy. As part of the 70s San Francisco rock scene, she sang background vocals for the Tubes. She formed her own band, Pearl Harbor and the Explosions, released an album, and toured with the Talking Heads. She moved to London and became part of a new scene and connected with The Clash, eventually marrying Clash bassist Paul Simonon, touring with them and joining The Clash on stage many times. In 1980, she released her debut solo album, Don't Follow Me, I'm Lost Too, which featured Simonon, Topper Hedden, and Mick Jones from The Clash, as well as Wilco Johnson and Mickey Gallagher from Ian Dury and the Blockheads. Not a bad group backing you up. Now Don't Follow Me has been issued on CD for the first time and in a limited purple grape pressing on vinyl. We'll get to all that, but it's a great album, pure rockabilly. Reminds me of Wanda Jackson, Robert Gordon, Eddie Cochran, Gene Vincent, and more. Let's listen in on my interview with the great, gracious Pearl Harbor. So welcome, Pearl. Thanks so much for taking the time to chat, and I'm super excited to talk to you today.
Thanks, Doug. I'm glad to be here.
I like to start with this question. Let's go back. What are some of your earliest musical memories? What is it you think that got you into music?
I'd say it's my four older brothers. I had four big brothers, and they all loved music, and they all collected different records. Like my oldest brother, and he was quite a bit older. He'd go to college, and I was a little kid, and then he'd come home with all the stuff like Crosby, Stills, and Nash and stuff like that, and Joni Mitchell and Jackson Browne and all that sort of music, which I really loved when I was a kid. Another brother collected girl group stuff, including Motown. And then another brother collected British rock and roll. And then my second to the oldest brother, Jimmy, he collected a lot of different kinds of rock and roll, and nobody collected country or rockabilly. That came later on in my life, but all my brothers liked music. And so that was really how I got to like music, was through them. And then when I started listening to all the girl groups and the girl singers, I was crazy about them, and I'd stand in front of the mirror when I was a little kid and pretend I was Ronnie Spector. I kid you not, I'm sure everybody says that, but I really did. If my dad was alive, he could tell you it's true, because he busted me standing in front of the mirror pretending I was Ronnie Spector. But I will always love her the best, even though I totally love everyone, including Wanda Jackson and all that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I definitely hear that girl group influence on the album that's being reissued. How'd you get into rockabilly? How'd you discover country and rockabilly?
There's a record store in Mill Valley, California, which is up north, just north of San Francisco, and it was called Village Music. And Village Music is, unfortunately, it's no longer there, but John Goddard, the owner, he's still around, and he still has a small annex.
Okay.
Of Village Music in Mill Valley. But the record store was the best record store in the whole world, and anyone would agree with you who had been there at the time. Like, all the collectors went there, all the rock stars went there, because he had all the walls were completely plastered with shows that he'd been to. He's seen everyone from the Beatles to the Ronettes to Elvis to Little Richard to Carl Perkins. So he was somebody who was a huge influence on my life. So I used to hang out at his record store, and he was always playing rockabilly and country and stuff like that. And I'd say, who's that?
Uh-huh.
And, ooh, I like that and stuff like that. When I wanted to form a band of my own, I said to him, oh, play me all your favorite female singers. And he said, I think my favorite is Wanda Jackson. And so he played me Fujiyama Mama, and then that was it. That was it. As soon as I heard that, there was nothing better for me. I wanted to be her. I wanted to sound like her, just her, everything.
Wanda is amazing. And so you've met her many times.
I have.
She's an influence. So tell us what she means to you and what it was like meeting with her. And I'm sure you've performed with her.
I haven't performed with her. It's funny, it's slightly heartbreaking and really dorky tale. And that is because I heard of her in the late 70s, like I said, through John Goddard. And no one was interested in rockabilly at that time in the late 70s and so on. And when I was starting a band with Pearl Harbor and the Explosions, they were not interested in rockabilly. So that was something. So I had about a foot long row of Wanda Jackson records. I think I might have everything she's ever put out. So okay. I went and when I met her, I had an armload of records, but I only brought out my favorite to sign because I didn't want her to have to sign 25 records, but rather five or something.
Sure.
This was in the late 80s because I had returned to the United States from London. And so it was the first time I saw her, and it was in San Francisco at Bimbo's, and that was this nightclub. So I told her, oh, I recorded Fujiyama Mama in 1980, and she was like, oh, thanks, honey, kind of thing. And then I think she looked at me, and she didn't quite understand because I don't think anybody had really approached her,
sure.
Rosie Flores or anybody at that time. So finally, yeah. When I was talking to her, she was just so happy and so sweet that she didn't really want to talk to me about music or anything. And I couldn't blame her. I just was happy to shake her hand and get her autographs and have my picture taken with her. So I did that a couple of times. And then a few years later, I met Rosie Flores, who is a Texas country blues rockabilly gal.
Yeah.
And very wonderful person, also knows her musical history. And then she loves Wanda Jackson. So she met Wanda, and I don't play any instruments. And Rosie is a great guitar player. So I'm sure she had a different conversation with Wanda Jackson than I did. And so then they decided to work together and make this Wanda Jackson like appreciation album or something like that. And no one asked me. Huh. No one asked me. And Rosie, even the first time I met her, she said, "You're the reason why I know who Wanda Jackson is." And I was like, "Oh, thanks, Rosie." But then she just doesn't ask me. And no one ever asked me to do anything with even the Cramps. I know them, them really well. And Ivy says to me, "Oh my God, Rosie asked us to do something for Wanda." And I said, "Oh, Ivy, did you remind her about me?" And she was like, "Oh, Pearl, I'm sorry, but no, because we were just so excited to do something. We were only thinking of ourselves." And I said, "Oh, that's okay, but dang." So that's the story of my life sometimes.
And you say that, and it's very interesting now that I think about it. I've seen Rosie Flores. I've never seen Wanda. And I've seen the Cramps several times. Huge Cramps fan, too. But now that I think about it, you must have been my intro to Wanda as well. So thank you for that. Thank you for that. So that is cool. What other of the rockabilly greats do you think of as your main influences?
As far as the boys go, I'll always, of course, love the Eddie Cochran and the Gene Vincent and all the greats. How could you not? But as far as male singers, I prefer like George Jones, the warmth of his voice, or even, of course, Hank Williams Sr.
Sure.
I just love their voices so much, and that's what draws me to them. And, of course, the music is very simple, and I like that too.
Yeah.
So I like 50s rockabilly and country, and then I like 60s soul and rock and roll. That's all my bag, all that stuff.
Yeah, and I definitely felt that on the album Don't Follow Me, I'm Lost Too. And then obviously the Wanda Jackson influence, the big female bands influence, that wall of sound. But then also, and I don't know if this is going to be a surprise, I was reminded of Eddie Cochran, Gene Vincent, but also Robert Gordon, that era.
Robert Gordon is 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And I look for older, but I love Robert Gordon and all that stuff. I met him and Chris Spedding played on one of my albums, and I like all that scene, but I think when I made Don't Follow Me, I'm Lost Too, I think I was thinking of the older folks instead of more contemporary. But yes, you're correct. I do like Robert.
he was great. Very cool. The lineup on the album alone, that's quite a list of names to even remember.
Yeah, a bunch of great guys, I'll tell you that. I was
Yeah.
lucky, but I was very
Crazy.
young. I wasn't starstruck or anything. I just was happy to meet these people who were such characters. And I think they thought I was a character too. So it worked out. And then because you and I are happily talking about old music, that's what I talked to them about.
Yeah.
And so that's what made it easy. Us working together, me and the Clash and the Blockheads and Nigel from Whirlwind and Steve New from the Rich Kids, all of us were record collectors and
Yeah.
all of us loved old music. For them to meet a funny American girl who liked that stuff and was going to pay them, Warner Brothers were going to pay them to work with me, they're like, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, it's like you said, relating on a musical level. A lot of people in bands don't get that with fans or people that talk to them, and just that's the stuff they want to talk about.
That's right, yeah.
So if you had to pick, and obviously, again, I'm a Clash fan, we could talk about them for hours, but if you had to pick one single favorite Clash story or memory, what would it be?
I've told it so many times, but it has to be my favorite one because it was all about me. It wasn't all about the Clash, but I was mad at them. Did you hear the story about when I had a fight with Joe Strummer?
No, I haven't heard that story, but I would love to.
It's a good one, and that's why it's my favorite. And it is about me, but it's also about women standing up for themselves. And it isn't always easy. And this was in the early 80s, and this was after all the Clash and Joe Strummer, and who the hell am I? But this is what happened. Paul and I got married in 1982. We did it very quietly and all that junk, no big hoopla. This,
Sure.
that, or the other. And it was just real nice and all that junk. And then about a year or two later, let's see, I don't remember the year. It might have been 84, I don't know, 85, something like that. And the Clash were in Italy on a tour and they were finishing up. And so they were all drunk and they were all having this meeting in Italy in somebody's hotel room and they were all drunk and talking about everything. And so Paul calls me from the meeting and says, "Oh, hello, Paul. Oh, and Joe think that we shouldn't be married anymore." And I'm like, "What? What are you talking about? What's going on over there? What are you guys doing?" He says, "They say it's not rock and roll for me to be married." I said, "Oh, is that right?" I said, "And what did you say, Paul?" And he goes, "Dunno." And I said, "Dunno, you don't know, you didn't say anything, you didn't stand up for me." He says, "I didn't know what to say, did I?" And I said, "I'm sorry that you didn't know what to say because I know what to say, but it's okay, Paul. You do your meeting and stuff, and I'll see you when you get home." And he says, "All right." And he didn't know, Paul knew me very well, but he wasn't really, what could I say, not wise enough, but he should have known that I was going to do something because I did. I met them at the airport. So they were coming in from Italy, and I had a couple of cocktails at the airport to calm me down. And as soon as I got off the airplane, Joe comes off the airplane and he's the first one and he says, "Hello, gorgeous." Because that's what he always did to me. He was always joking with me like that. And I said, "Oh, gorgeous, am I?" I said, "Joe, what's this gorgeous stuff? You really think I'm gorgeous? If you think I'm gorgeous, am I rock and roll? But I'm not rock and roll enough to be Paul's wife. Did you say that or did you not?" And he looks down and he goes, "Yeah, I said it." And I had on cowboy boots, poor Joe. I kicked the hell out of his shins with my cowboy boots and I was attacking him. And then Paul comes up both behind him and sees me and he doesn't know what to do. So he shuffles off to the side. Then Bernie and Cosmo storm in there and they see me and they start running away. And no one's saving Joe and everyone's afraid of me. And I'm 5'3" and weigh like 115 pounds or probably less at the time. And so I couldn't believe it. And then the a cop, a female and a male, grabbed me and tried to get me off of Joe. And then Cosmos tries to step in there. And then I start kicking Cosmo and he runs away. So then we all go outside and get, and the lady cop is really laughing because she thinks I'm hilarious. And she thinks it's very funny that this little girl is beating up these guys from the Clash because everyone knew who the Clash were at the airport. Sure. And so we go outside and get in the line for the taxi. And when we get in the taxi, Joe and Cosmo, I don't know why they got in the taxi with me, but they shouldn't have done, but they did. And so was Paul. And so I let them have it in the taxi. I stopped being violent and I stopped kicking, but rather I verbally put really got mad at them and said, Joe, so I'm not rock and roll enough to be married to the Clash. I said, Cosmo, you dress your girlfriend up to look just like me. And Joe, you walk around London with an orange mohawk pushing a pram. And you guys want to make fun of me? And they're both quiet as mice. Then when we got to my house, me and Paul, we took off and we went to the house. And that night, Joe knocked on the door and he said to me, I want to take you out. And he said to Paul, I just want to go alone with Pearl. And Paul said, that was fine. And so Joe took me out drinking and we went from bar to pub. And everywhere we went, he raised his pant leg and he showed everybody his bloody shins and said, this lady did that to me. And she's the only girl and the only person who's ever stood up to me. And then he took off my high heel and he poured his beer in my high heel and drank it and said, I've never done this in my life or whatever. I was really chuffed because he meant it.
Yeah, that's an amazing.
He did something wrong and I called him on it. We're all in our 20s. Everybody does and says stupid things, but everybody lets everything slide, but not me.
Yeah. Wow. What a story. And no, good for you. Nobody stood up to him, he said, but good for you. That's great. So last week I saw the news that you're cancer free, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. And how are you feeling?
Mentally, I'm as happy as I could be. I couldn't believe when the doctor told me that. I really couldn't because lung cancer is no joke.
Yeah.
And lots of times it spreads and lots of times it does this and that. So I'm still they really got me though with the radiation and the chemo and I'm still paying for it. I'm really sick, but so physically I feel not so great, but mentally I'm really happy and I have one more chemo to go and then I'm done. And so I'd say in 6 months, I hope to be really strong. The doctor said he didn't know if I'll be able to sing again, but I don't believe that because my lungs got really destroyed by this chemo and radiation. Uh-huh. But I'm a tough cookie and I think I can do you just have to work really hard at it and see what happens.
Yeah.
I have a country band. You see?
That, yes, that's true. But first of all, yeah, you are tough. You stood up to Joe Strummer, so you've got that.
I stood up to Joe Strummer and cancer. How do you like that, kid?
Yeah, exactly. You can't be beat. Are you going to do some live shows at some point or are you not sure?
I'm certainly not sure and I certainly want to. Like I just said, my lungs are destroyed, so I don't know what's going to happen. But if I can do it, I'm going to do it. But I don't want to sit in a chair on stage and say, it's not me. I got to jump around. It'll take a little while for me to get there, but I'm certainly determined.
All right. I'll keep an eye out. I'm in Southern California now.
Oh, yeah. I keep thinking you're from far away.
Oh, no. Down south a bit. But love to see you live. So in a nutshell, how'd the reissue of the debut album come about?
Oh, really by complete surprise. They re-released Pearl Harbor and the Explosions. And I couldn't believe that because it's such a pat on the back. It's such a stroke to your ego that if somebody wants to re-release my record, really? People care? So that happened and I was very thankful for that. And then I did a record in 95 with East Bay Ray and some like really great San Francisco rock and rollers. And so they re-released that. And then, so this didn't come as a total shock, but I wasn't expecting to get this email from a guy who helped me get those other deals. And he said, hey, these people, Liberation Hall, I want a re-release, Don't Call Me. And I said, yay, because that's my favorite album. And so that's the album I really wanted to get re-released because it didn't get any kind of promotion or anything. So
Yeah.
I was happy, really happy. And so it was just through an email, hey, would you like to work with us? And I just said, yeah.
Oh, wow. That is amazing. And it's an amazing album. The full name is Don't Follow Me, I'm Lost Too. So it's reissued on CD for the first time. And then there's a purple vinyl pressing of it. And I'm looking at, so it's got Paul on there, Topper and Mick from The Clash, Willow Johnson, Mickey Gallagher from Ian Dury and the Blockheads, and then a bunch of other guys. So how'd you get all these guys together? Were they friends of yours or friends to friends? How'd you get that backing band together? That's no joke of a group of backing musicians.
It was all the best rock and roll musicians, if you ask me, in London, and Cosmo Vinyl got them all for me. I am not responsible for getting those group of people together. It was Cosmo. I met Cosmo in 1977 on Ian Dury and the Blockheads. They did one American tour, and you're too young to have seen it, but it was fantastic. So I met Cosmo, and then we became friends and talked about music all the time, of course. And he introduced me to Ian and the Blockheads and the Clash. And I liked all them. And like I said, we all got along. And then Cosmo knew I wasn't happy with Pearl Harbor and the Explosions because I wanted to make a rock and roll album. And he said, you should move to London and I'll get a band together for you. And all the Clash and the Blockheads really like you and they'd like to work with you. And I just said, oh my gosh. So I did that and I moved to London and that's what happened. They all worked with me and I just can't believe it all happened, but it did.
Yeah, and it's amazing that, again, that lineup of musicians. And then the interesting thing, obviously, I love that you've had that, you had that punk connection, the rock connection, and the rockabilly. But to me, and especially with a band like The Clash, there's a very fine line between punk and rockabilly. You'll see a lot of punks go to rockabilly. And why do you think that is?
I think that I can only speak for myself and the Clash and then Whirlwind and then what I saw in London, although I suppose everybody feels the same way, is that rockabilly were the rebels of the 50s.
Yeah.
So they were like the punk rockers of the 50s. They had the greasy hair, and the moms and the dads all said they were the devil's children and just like the punks and all that stuff. And they were really wild and bad boys and juvenile delinquents and drug addicts and all that stuff. It's a lot of fun. Everybody likes rock and roll, likes all that stuff. And so it just makes sense that people would like rockabilly and punk. And then a lot of the punks, especially in England, they liked roots rock and
Sure.
reggae, ska, and all that stuff because in Jamaica, that was also rebel music. So anything that I guess at the time your parents hated, you loved.
Exactly. There you go. So what's next for Pearl Harbor?
I put a country band together and they're so great. There's no drums, which is the opposite of Don't Follow Me, I'm Lost Too. I had
Sure.
two drummers because that's what I really wanted. I saw Gary Glitter
Oh,
and
yeah.
Gary Glitter had two drummers. And I was like, and speaking of bringing the two together, I never saw anything like it. Gary Glitter's audience in the 1970s in London was
Wow.
punks and half skinheads and rock and rollers. And usually you get those people together and they're all fighting.
Yeah.
But they all loved this music so much that all these kids, and I went to the shows too, and I was not scared, but I was like, oh, I better be prepared to run. And at any rate, everybody just was singing along and jumping and dancing to the music, and everyone had a ball, and there was no fights or anything like that. In England, I really was lucky to be there in the 80s because everybody was so passionate about
Yeah.
music, and they really, the kids in Britain knew their musical history. At every flea market, there's the record stalls of people who had nothing but rockabilly or nothing but reggae or nothing but Northern Soul. And it was just these collectors who had the greatest, most obscure singles you have ever seen. And I was so impressed that these people knew their music and loved it that much, because no one in the 70s that I'd ever met, aside from John Goddard, the guy who had the record store, nobody was that passionate.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, and they really liked that American music, back to Elvis and all the rockabilly stuff. So yeah, that's a great connection as well.
Yeah. But lastly, I put a great country band together. No drums. Remember I was telling you I used to have two drummers, no drums, because I wanted to sing. And when you have two drummers and electric guitars, you have to really sing loud unless you're wealthy enough to have a great sound system, which I never was. But so this band is pedal steel. Wow. And Gar, who plays pedal steel, he also plays lap steel, and he plays all kinds of stringed instruments. He's great. And then I have a double bass player, and then his brother is on guitar. So it's just the three of them and me. And I put together this country band, and a lot of the songs that are on Don't Follow Me, I'm Lost Too, I just countrified them.
Oh, wow.
Because Heaven's Gonna Be Empty, that's country. Yeah. Losing to You, that's country. Cowboys and Indians, I can do that. Fujiyama Mama, I can do that. Filipino Baby, I can do that. And I slowed them down and made them a little bit more like how they were supposed to be. But they're still. And so all the lyrics to all the songs that I hopefully they're all funny lyrics. And so the whole show, I just want to make people smile. It's not about anything else other than the having fun.
Before I let you go, anything to add?
Let's see here. Not really. I hope that if you like rock and roll, you should buy this record. I guess that's all I can say, because it's very old school. And all the songs are about 3 minutes long, and they're all done pretty much live. The songs are very simple. Most of them have a sense of humor. And like we've been talking about, there's great musicians. And it was done 44 years ago, before any of your listeners were born. But go ahead and take a listen, kids.
Yeah, and I'll talk about it a little bit more too, but it's a great album. You definitely can tell your influences. It's definitely a rockabilly album. Came out 1980, getting reissued. Mm-hmm. Came out right about the time of the Stray Cats, but they seemed to
before
get
the Stray Cats.
Before, you beat them. That's good.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. But
that's important to me. I love the Stray Cats, but we came out before them.
All right. Good to know. Thank you. And yeah, it's just, and so it's, thank you so much for taking the time. It's really a pleasure and an honor to get to talk to you today.
Oh, thanks, Doug. I enjoyed myself. And if any of your listeners want to know more about me, they can look at me at Pearl Harbor Music on Instagram, and you can see a lot of old pictures of me with the Clash and other people and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. And then so much that we didn't even touch on, the 70s San Francisco scene.
Oh, yeah.
Time with the Tubes.
Next time, Doug.
Yeah, I'd love to do it again. There's so much more we could talk about.
Okay, I'm up for it.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks, Doug.
Thanks for listening to The Albums That Saved Us. Find me at #albumsthatsavedus. Email me at albumsthatsavedus@gmail.com with feedback, criticism, ideas, albums, or bands you want to hear or talk about. Join the conversation on Facebook at facebook.com/albumsthatsavedus podcast. And there's a Facebook group as well. Albums That Saved Us is also on Twitter or X, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you like Albums That Saved Us, please also help spread the word. Share the links and tell some friends. Call in and leave a comment or question. Thanks for listening.